Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
It's a somber mood in the country, because although people were aware that the president was not well, not many have expected it to be so suddenly. Therefore, there is a sense of grief in the country.
Namibia installs a new president following the sudden death of President Hage Geingob.
Now, today is the last day of the voter registration and everything is going well. We have people registering, and because it's the last day, we expect more and more people to come to beat the deadline of 4 p.m. today.
Botswana Electoral Commission ends its voter registration process ahead of the coming general election.
Immediately, President Macky Sall addressed the nation and mentioned that he's going to postpone the presidential elections.
And Senegalese President Macky Sall indefinitely postpones the February 25th presidential election. We'll have an update. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Namibia, Vice President Nangolo Mbumba has been sworn in as the new president following the death of Hage Geingob. Geingob, 82, died in hospital early on Sunday, according to the presidency, which said he passed weeks after being diagnosed with cancer. Geingob had been in charge of the Southern African country since 2015, the year he announced he had survived prostate cancer. For reaction, I reached public policy analyst Marius Kudumo.
Yeah, it's a somber mood in the country, because although people were aware that the president was not well, not many have expected it to be so suddenly. Therefore, there is a sense of grief in the country. But of course, the majority of the people in this country are Christians. In their various denominations, there was a lot of offering prayers in the churches this morning. But obviously, it's a sense of grief, because it was somehow unexpected.
You know, constitutionally, we understand Vice President Nangolo Mbumba is sworn in. It appears everything is in order. Is that a true reflection of what is going on?
Yeah, look, that announcement should have made. I think they are still in the process of officially making that announcement. But the Constitution of the Republic of Namibia makes provision of what happens when a sitting president is not in a position to continue with his powers, functions, and responsibilities. As you have correctly indicated, the Constitution makes provision in an order of the Vice President, the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister, and then a Cabinet Minister. In other words, if one of those are not able because of certain reasons, then they follow that order. So the constitutional provision is clear, and we will just hear whether the constitutional provision have been followed or whether someone have declined. But that announcement was supposed to be made at all. I think they are about to make that announcement official.
Where do the people of Namibia go from here? Because this is the first time that Namibia is experiencing a president dying while in office. The founding president is still alive at the moment.
Yeah, it is a difficult situation. It's the first experience, but obviously the provisions of the Constitution provides in terms of what happened. But as you are also aware, Namibia is going to presidential and national assembly elections 2024. Normally, our elections are in November. Therefore, there will be elections to elect a president. And remember that the president in Namibia is directly elected, and then the members of the National Assembly. So we might have a president who's acting or who's standing as a president, but very soon we'll go to elections.
But I understand SWAPO has chosen a presidential candidate, although there have been talks about who to take over from. Whether the vice president will take over or the deputy prime minister, Madam Nandi Ndaitwah, taking over. So Explain to me briefly about the current situation.
Yeah, I think we need to make a distinction between the president as a head of state and government, as well as the procedures in SWAPO. So Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah is the vice president of SWAPO. So the SWAPO Congress makes also provision for what happens, and also the constitution of the state makes provision. So those matters will be handled by the SWAPO party in terms of the SWAPO constitution, as well as the country in terms of the country's constitution.
Marius Kudumo is a public policy analyst. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. In Botswana, voter registration for citizens who want to participate in the coming October general election ended Saturday. This, as the Independent Electoral Commission compiles a voter list to be used in the polls. But some opposition and civil society groups accused the electoral body of preventing them from monitoring the process. Backed by a recent ruling, the Electoral Commission maintains that it has the sole responsibility to administer elections in the Southern African country as enshrined in the Constitution. For more information about the just-ended voter registration process, I reach Osupile Maroba. He is the spokesperson for the Independent Electoral Commission of Botswana.
Everything is going well. Let's understand that Botswana conduct elections after every 5 years. And now this is the time that as we prepare for the October elections, we have to undertake voters registration. This voter registration started on the 5th of January 2024, and it was given a period of 30 days. Now, today is the last day of the voter registration, and everything is going well. We have people registering, and because it's the last day, we expect more and more people to come to beat the deadline of 4 p.m. today.
Osupile, how has been the responses of prospective voters who would want to participate in the elections in October by registering as the Electoral Commission compiles the voter registration list to be used for the elections?
You know, the response of Botswana is just a constant response that we have seen in the past, the registrations. We have prospective voters who have voted before, and we have quite a sizable number that would be their first time to register and participate in elections this year. So the response is a normal response as we expected it. And also we have in the past experienced an upsurge of numbers on the last day, which according to the reports that we are receiving, is the same situation where we are going to have quite a number of people now turning up before the close of registration at 4 p.m.
Does the Electoral Commission have a figure that they are targeting in this particular registration process?
Yes. You know, before we start general voter registration, we always try to establish the eligible voting population for the country. And this time around, we have a total of 1,700,000 people eligible to cast their vote. Remember that the population of Botswana is around 2.4 million. And out of this number of 1.7 million, which is the projected voting population, the commission has set itself 80%, which translates into 1.3 million, which is intended to register for the October general elections.
Some opposition groups express concern that they are being prevented from monitoring the process, which they think will undermine the integrity of the voter registration list, which they think will affect subsequently the integrity of the anticipated October general election. What is your reaction to this concern?
You know what? The Electoral Commission is not concerned because the legal framework of Botswana allows anybody who feels that maybe there is need to look into the law to raise that concern. And we have the courts of law that undertake these processes. And because what we are doing is prescribed in the law, that was not a concern. And as the courts have ruled, We didn't have any issue, and that did not affect the people to turn up to vote. Like I mentioned earlier, that the response to voter registration is similar to the previous registrations which were conducted in this country.
What is the overall message of the Electoral Commission to the people of Botswana as you conclude voter registration process on Saturday?
Well, we always emphasize that every citizen who has registered as a voter must understand that it's not the end of their participation in the democracy. And the last participation will be for them to come up and cast their vote on voting day as they decide on their representatives. So we encourage every voter, even those who have not registered, to go and register before the end of the day, and also to get ready for the following processes so that they ensure that on voting day, all their names and records are in order so that they're able to cast their vote.
Osupile Maroba is the spokesperson for Independent Electoral Commission of Botswana. He spoke with me from the capital, Habaroni. In Senegal, President Macky Sall has postponed the planned February 25th presidential election. This after announcing in a televised address to the nation Saturday that he had cancelled the relevant law due to electoral issues he warned would fuel disputes. With little more than 3 weeks to go before the vote, the unprecedented step of delaying the poll to an unspecified date pitches Senegal into uncharted constitutional waters. Some opposition and civil society groups say the move amounts to an institutional coup. One opposition coalition has already vowed to challenge the move in the courts, raising the prospect of a protracted legal battle that could further muddy the democratic outlook. Sall's decision follows the Constitutional Council's January decision to exclude some prominent contenders from the electoral list, which has found discontent among the electoral process. For more reaction and the latest update, I reach reporter Alpha Jalu in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
There are mixed reactions everywhere. Some people were burning tires in the locality of Kermasar. There were also some running battles around, you know, the grand of area with the security forces. Well, people are reacting very angry because they are describing now Macky Sall as one of the biggest dictator Senegal ever got as a president. So reaction is coming from everywhere.
What has been the reaction of opposition political parties who I understand are trying to protest this announcement?
Immediately, President Macky Sall addressed the nation and mentioned that he's going to postpone the presidential elections. They also convened a press briefing, especially the 20 parties that were already screened by the Constitutional Court, and they're supposed to start their campaigning today. And one of them, DJ Fall, and also one of the ladies, Anta Babakan, of the ARC party, they said that they are going to attack this measure taken by President Macky Sall, and none of them will stop them from starting their campaigning today. And they've also said that all of them, the 20 parties and those who were also refused by the Constitutional Court, they all agreed to meet today at 1500 hours, in downtown Dakar to start to protest, up to the State House. So we are we don't know whether they have get, a permit, to do that, or whether the security forces will allow them to do that. But they've invited everybody, both, ordinary Senegalese and, their well-wishers and their supporters, to convert by 3 p.m. this afternoon so that they can, manifest their, protest.
What has been the reaction from civil society groups in the country so far?
The civil society groups, especially Mr. Aliutin of the Africa Jump Center and some of his colleagues, they said that they've set up, an ad hoc committee to facilitate. And they said that they are going to set up this group to make sure that they are going to screen and they are going to see the reason why President Macky Sall have just decided to make this announcement. And they are going to make sure that if it is something that is illegal, then they see how they will work with the opposition to make sure that President Macky Sall they will all have a national dialogue. You know, President Macky Sall said that the main reason, to postpone the election is that there were so many irregularities from the Constitutional Council, and of course, the allegation that some of members of the Constitutional Council are corrupt. Karim Wade's camp, the Senegalese Democratic Party, said that they know that the reason why Karim Wade is excluded is that there were some corruption from the members of the Constitutional Court. So this ad hoc committee from the civil society group said that they are going to look at all those avenues and to make sure that, if there's any possibility of, convincing President Macky Sall to set a new date so that it will not take long, and they try to work out on all these things to make sure that there will be a transparent and a credible elections.
On April 2nd, the second term of President Macky Sall is supposed to end and hand over power to a new president. Some people believe that if he goes past it, then there could be a constitutional crisis. Where does the country go from here?
That's a very good question, because members of Mr. Sonko's party, PASTEF, they said that beyond, April 2nd, even if Macky Sall continue to be the president of this country, he is doing that, illegally. So none of them said that they are going to call him President Macky Sall. So they know that, his tenure will be very illegal. So some of the opposition parties, most of them are also saying that even some ordinary Senegalese say that if the opposition allow President Macky Sall to continue beyond 2nd April, that means that he's the president of this country illegally.
Alpha Jallo is a reporter. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. In Nigeria, the Independent National Electoral Commission is releasing results of Saturday's polls. This after citizens in 26 states voted in by-elections and reruns in 80 local government areas to fill vacancies in the Senate and other federal and state constituencies. For analysis and the latest update, I reach attorney Leonard Anyogo. He is a constitutional law expert and political analyst in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
It is an offshoot of the general election of 2023. The rerun election in Nigeria is as a result of some legislators that were elected and have not been appointed as ministers or commissioners. So some voluntarily resigned. So their offices have to be filled. And then the large portion of the rerun is because of a court order, the rerun. What that means is that election tribunal nullifies some elections and order that a rerun be conducted to determine who actually is the winner. For instance, where the elections were not conducted substantially in accordance with the law, and it is challenged in the election tribunal, the court will order for a rerun so that the true winner will emerge. So that is what is happening today. But then, the other side of the story is that we should not be having rerun elections if INEC do their work well.
Some Nigerians have been critical of INEC's ability or lack thereof to administer credible elections, which they say result in a lot of these reruns, and that the need for courts to come in and adjudicate and decide who won legitimately or otherwise. Is this a true reflection on the ground?
To an extent, you can't completely blame INEC. Sometimes the political parties too are equally guilty. Now, we are entering a phase that looks as if Nigeria election is court sanctioned. What I mean that is the courts now tend to determine who the real winner is. Where INEC would declare one person as a winner, the court will seize the other way around, because the election was were not conducted in compliance with the laws of the land. Now, INEC introduced some novel issue like electronic vote, like electronic transmission of results and all that. That was not seen. And in fact, to a lot of Nigerians, it was as if the hope was dashed when the court interpreted this that, okay, electronic transmission is not compulsory. So we need to digitalize our elections and make it more IT savvy now, so that it will be less from manipulation. Because most times these elections are conducted, and when you go to court and you are able to prove that no, this election was not conducted in compliance with the law, the court will set it aside and order a rerun, or sometimes nullify the whole entire election, or sometimes even declare a candidate unfit to even participate in the subsequent elections. So a whole lot of work has to be done.
Some people are calling on INEC and the political parties and other stakeholders to come together to find the best way to ensure that Nigeria's elections are credible because disputes usually occur, which leads usually to the intervention by the judicial system to adjudicate on that matter. Is this call legitimate, and will that help at all?
It is a legitimate call. You can even see the presidential election to disputed up to the highest court of the land, which is the Supreme Court. And even at that, the losers didn't feel that sense of justice. So the whole work has to be done. Because now, if the credibility of election is challenged, then we are going to have a government that emerged from such an exercise to have credibility challenged. Because then, of course, people lose hope in governance. So we want to see a situation where we have a clear winner. There are laws, there are rules in Nigeria. Nigeria is have one of the best set of rules, our laws. But then you need to have the political way to obey these rules, obey these laws. Right from election is not just the day of election. It's even from the primaries. You know, so it is geared all those. It's a complete package from when you are nominated as a candidate and then you stand the general election and all that. So I think the problem I have identified, and other persons too, is that we tend not to obey the laws to the letter. You know, we tend to pick the ones to obey and not the other. So when you have that and you go to court, the court always modify these elections. So, and we are suggesting that there should be punishment for people that violate these laws. And that's why some people are calling for election tribunal to try offenders. We have not seen that in Nigeria. When people that violate or cause electoral fraud are being jailed, they try to do that a few times, but it's not substantial. So when you have people that violate laws and they are not punished, they will continue to do it. So there must be the punishment essential of electoral offenders. And that's why the international body has to equally come in and help, because they don't, after you monitor these elections and you report, and so this election has been fraudulent, people that perpetrate this fraud should be punished to act as a deterrence to others. I think that is what is lacking in the moment. Thank you for having me.
Leonard Anyaugo is a constitutional law expert and political analyst. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Guinea-Bissau, a leading member of the African Party of Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, or PAIGC, says an immediate intervention is needed from regional bloc ECOWAS to resolve the ongoing political challenges facing the country. Imani Namumoja, a member of the Politburo of the Central Committee of PAIGC, says the party with its coalition partner Paitera Ranka plan to soon approach the African Union and the UN Security Council to solve the challenges if ECOWAS differs. His remarks come after opposition critics and civil society groups called on President Umaru Sisoko Imbalu to rescind the decision to dissolve parliament. Imani Na Umoja tells me that the country needs its international partners and ECOWAS to help resolve the political crisis facing Guinea-Bissau.
We want the doors of the National People's Assembly to open up. Right now, they're blocked by armed masked men. We also want them to intervene on the case of the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court justice, president, resigned under duress. Those are the main things we want to do. And if they're going to keep these armed stabilization missions, they should be just. They should protect all of the state institutions, not just the president. They should protect the National People's Assembly, the governmental palace, and the minister of government. And we also want ECOWAS to intervene to make sure that the National People's Assembly begins to meet, can democratically elect a new electoral council. Because we just did elections in June with an outdated, incomplete national electoral council.
So why is your group basically issuing an ultimatum to ECOWAS to act, saying that if ECOWAS doesn't intervene, you will have a campaign to contact the African Union and the UN Security Council Political Affairs Department to act? What does this mean?
It means that... So we know that ECOWAS has different factions. You have a faction in ECOWAS that's democratic. You also have another faction in ECOWAS that's not democratic. Now, you know the United Nations Security Council is really the main responsible in the world for preventing wars or violent uprisings, to have a climate of peace. But they delegate their authority to the regional bodies. For example, in Europe, they delegate their authority to the European Union. In Africa, they delegate it to the African Union. The African Union, for its part, it delegates it to the sub-regional entities, like in our case, the West African states, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS.
Why wouldn't you engage President Sisoko Imbalu to resolve this issue? Because there were concerns that while he was away, abroad, there was an attempted coup. So he had to act as per the constitution that mandates him to protect life and property in Guinea-Bissau.
Okay, first of all, I want you to know that whether there was an attempted coup or not, the fact of the matter is that the Guinea-Bissau constitution even deals with those factors. For example, in 1998-99, we had a political military conflict, but the National People's Assembly continued to meet. In 2022, the same Umaru Sissoko Embalo, he dissolved the National People's Assembly. Even though we didn't like it, he had the right to do that because the National People's Assembly had been elected since 2019. But the Constitution in itself says that you cannot dissolve the National People's Assembly in less than 12 months at the election. We just had elections in June, 6 months ago. And even when you do this, it has to be a serious institutional crisis. Now, of course, that's relative. So what the Constitution previews is that if the president has the thought of dissolving the National People's Assembly, first, he or she should call the president of the National People's Assembly. Secondly, he should call all of the political formations that have representation in the National People's Assembly. Thirdly, he should call for a meeting of the Council of State and listen to them. If you constitutionally dissolve the National People's Assembly after 12 months after the election, then that's what's called a permanent commission of the National People's Assembly, made up of 15 deputies, the president, two vice presidents, and secretaries of the head table of the National People's Assembly, as well as another 10 that are elected based upon the proportional representation they have in the National People's Assembly. But they blocked the whole door.
Where does the coalition, the opposition coalition, Paitera, Ranka, and PAIGC, where do you go from here? Following these calls on the international community to intervene.
We're the coalition that won the elections democratically. We're the ones who, the National People's Assembly is not dissolved. That's the wish of Umaru Sissoko Embalo. But the Constitution has more power than any individual in this country. If the ECOWAS, the African Union, United Nations, are able to bring about the solution to this problem, I'm sure that there will be other alternatives. But one thing is clear, that the people of Guinea-Bissau, the people of Africa and the world cannot tolerate one single person doing what that person wants to do. Acting like there was never elections in the first place, acting like there's never a constitution constitution in the first place, election in the second place. We won't tolerate it.
Imani Naumoja is a member of the Politburo of the Central Committee of PAIGC. He spoke with me from the Guinea-Bissau capital, Bissau.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings, heard every weekday at 1500 Universal right here on VOA in Africa. And coming up on Tuesday's Spotlight Artist of the Week this week, Artemis Pyle. He is a legendary Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member who was the drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd. He has a brand new album called Anthems, which features Dolly Parton and quite a few others. Tune in Tuesday to VOA Africa for Border Crossings.
A group of prominent Australians, including former politicians, diplomats, and academics, have called on the government to adopt an activist middle power role to avert US-China conflict. For VOA Phil Mercer reports from Sydney, Australia.
A group of high-profile Australians Wednesday called for the government to take action to head off conflict between the United States and China. The group, led by former Australian Foreign Affairs Ministers Bob Carr and Gareth Evans, said in a statement that without a comprehensive new détente, tensions between the United States and China could escalate into a conflict that could involve Australia. 50 prominent Australian public figures, including former state government premiers, diplomats, writers and academics, have called on the government to act as an intermediary to diffuse tensions. The group said it supports a balance of power in the Indo-Pacific region, in which the United States and China respect and recognize each other as equals. It added that if neither side demands absolute primacy, the risk to global peace and prosperity would be reduced. There's been no official comment so far from Washington or Beijing on the declaration. China is Australia's biggest trading partner. The centre-left government of Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has stabilised relations with Beijing after years of disagreement and distrust over various geopolitical and trade disputes, including China's ambitions in the Pacific and the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. Australia also has deep-seated security links to the United States, dating back to the early 1950s. Carr told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that Australia has the opportunity to act as an honest broker between the United States and China.
Australia's role is to plant the notion of greater collaboration and less adversarial talk in the relationship. Taiwan, the most challenging diplomatic question here, provides a perfect opportunity of diplomatic language being an alternative to a descent into conflict and argument that could give rise to war.
The Australian government has previously conceded that there will be differences and difficulties in its bilateral relationship with China. The government is pushing ahead with plans to acquire nuclear-powered submarines under the AUKUS accord with the United States and Britain. Analysts say that China's increasing assertiveness is a key motivation behind the trilateral AUKUS agreement. But China has accused the three countries of a Cold War mentality, saying the alliance was embarking on a path of error and danger. Phil Mercer, VOA News, Sydney.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's One Man's Point of View with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Egotistic slogans, rhetoric now dominate the airwaves and other platforms of the media. We see also a move being made in the Middle East. For example, we know that Raqqa, an area where 1.9 Palestinians have been squeezed, will soon be attacked by the IDF, Israel Defense Force, in the coming days. And then the Palestinians will be forced to save their lives to flee to the Sinai, which is a red line for Egypt. These developments make it likely that the African continent may become caught in the vortex of the Middle East maelstrom. Last week, Algeria, one of the three African states in the Security Council, called for the convening of the Security Council to take a look at the provisional measures order directed to Israel and the Palestinian group, Hamas. They also said, I'm talking about Algeria, said that the Security Council must take action to activate or to ease compliance of those six orders. When the Council met, United States Ambassador took the floor to say she wondered why the Council is being convened. In our view, the provisional measures of the International Court of Justice was nothing more than what the United States itself has been pursuing in the Middle East and advising Israel to do. However, the overwhelming majority of the Council did not share that view, not that of the Israeli representative, as to speak. In the view of the other members, the orders given to Israel by the court is binding on Israel, and it must comply with it. And that is why all of them in that meeting of the Council call for a ceasefire. The South African ambassador, in a cool and a calm statement, says that Israel is observing closely the behavior of Israel in carrying out the orders of the court. In this regard, she reminded the Council that the court had given Israel 1 month to demonstrate that it was complying on the orders. And he said for the part of South Africa, they are carefully compiling the violation of Israel since the order of the court, the orders were issued. She also called on others and the international community that signed on to the Genocide Convention to pursue the case in the International Court of Justice. And a delegate of Algeria has now tabled a draft resolution calling on the Council to adopt a ceasefire resolution to make it possible for Israel to comply with the court's judgment. And the South African delegate also made it clear that even if one takes what the U.S. representative said, that there was no mention of ceasefire in the orders, he said there is no way that Israel could comply with those orders without calling for a ceasefire. And that would also apply to the court's order to Hamas to unconditionally release Israeli captives in their custody. We can now see also that the South African government is getting bothered by what the foreign minister said in South Africa on Friday and Thursday, that since they went to the court, the South African government and the ANC have been bombarded with disinformation, misinformation, and outright distortion. And she condemned this misrepresentation of the motive of South Africa. And when South Africa said it was acting on a place of humanity, the Israelis are saying, no, he's acting on the part of Hamas, or even more extreme, that of Iran. And the South African ambassador, I mean foreign minister, also said something which was shocking. She said that they have information that the Israeli government is planning to get itself involved in the coming presidential and legislative election in South Africa with the aim of defeating the ANC. And there are rumors in South Africa that if this regime change playbook is set out in South Africa, it might benefit the Democratic Alliance, a mainly white political party. And also, there are many Africans who are saying, if this is made evident that Israel is interfering in the election process of South Africa, the African Union has no alternative but to interfere and protect the electoral process of South Africa. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Celebration day, medication day. In Africa, we're catching vibes with bougie wives. We drip with ice, won't stay up all night. Celebration day, medication. A celebration day. In Africa, we're catching vibes with bougie wives. We're moving wild, we're doing up all night. We do do.
Dance, 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 yeah. Push, 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 dance, 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 yeah.
I want more life, come never, never. Pretty dancing, never, never. Feeling just the beat, oh, right into the beat. I want more life, come never, never.
All right, today I'm joined with a special guest from Ghana. Nilante has just dropped a brand new single called Celebration. Welcome to the show, Nilante. How are you?
Thank you so much, Nicole. I'm fine. I'm so fine.
Yes, we are so glad to finally have you featured on our show today. And so tell us a little bit about yourself now. From what I know, you are a doctor. Internal medicine.
Yes,
doctor.
So. Specialist in internal medicine and therapeutics.
Yes.
And so, I'm a member of the West Africa College of Physicians and Surgeons.
That is outstanding.
But at the same time, I play a lot of music too.
Yes. And, so which one came first? Yeah. Did the music come first, or did the doctorate come first?
I think the music came first because I found myself. Very drawn to the music of Wolome, Fela Rantankuti, Otibisa when I was growing up. You know, I would hum their songs. The melodies were always playing in my mind. And my father would always listen to Bob Marley and Jimmy Cliff and Johnny Nash.
Okay.
And then reggae also came to my mind. So it became like a jollof,
yes.
You know, of music. Afro and reggae, you know, so that's the kind of influences I grew up on.
Yes, because when I listen to your music, it just makes me happy. It really makes me happy because I love reggae and I love the beats. Oh my gosh. And so your father's responsible for this.
You see now. You see now. But it's so, I mean, reggae and Afro, they are so linked. It's like cousins. You know what I mean? And for me, what I foresee, right? Is like a circuit, you know, in which you have the passion, you know, being the heartbeat, you know, and reggae and Afro being the veins and the arteries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it makes you complete.
Your highness, I'm on a roll up with the fire.
and you hear a certain low-pitched, rumbling, diastolic murmur, you know that that is a mitral valve issue. You know, and you'll be able to appreciate low pitch only if you have that appreciation through music.
Wow.
You have to understand.
I've never thought about that.
So, yeah.
Wow. That is amazing.
So, Charlie, there's so much similarity.
Yes, sir. Yes.
I mean, even thinking about how we operate as a team on the ward, you know, you have nurses, you have orderlies, you have pharmacists, you have lab technicians, you have physicians, all coming on a ward round, and everybody is obeying the rules that guide us, just like musicians obey the time signature that guides them, you know, but at the same time, you're listening to the other person, you learn how to teamwork, you know, and the pharmacist will bring a suggestion, the nurse will bring a suggestion, and through all this, you come to the best, you know, it's the same thing in music. So you have the lead guitarist playing something, the bass guitarist playing something, the drummer playing something.
It is.
And at the end of the day, you have
Wow.
It's so many similarities.
That is so... Wow. You know, I never looked at it like that. But that makes perfect sense. It's like everything working as a unit.
Exactly.
You know, we all have our different...
And actually, that's what actually I think the world is supposed to be. You know, some unit working within the confines of nature, you know, and just ensuring a prolongation of life and existence.
Now you're talking my language. Well, we're gonna. Oh my God!
I'll be the girl them zaddy, the girl them zaddy. Can you give me 1 minute attention? I go down and swear for you. When my name be what your lips they mention, I go be right by you. Enemy slow progression, then they watch how I move. Doubting me never go ever. Baby, I go need your groove. And I know what you're thinking, so I go try a little harder. All these things that I'm doing, only to get you to love my martyr. So you can bring on your girlfriend, so we party harder. And you can tell them I'm your best friend. Never mind. I just want you.
I want to be loved by you.
I just want to.
I want to be loved by you.
I just want to.
I want to be loved by you.
I just want to. Jacket, I go walk you to the market. Treat you like a lady, like a lady, like a lady. Oh, I go river, I go come carry water. I go full up the gen set for the power. Treat you like a lady, like a baby, like a lady. Oh,
girl, I know say you doubt me, so I go try a little harder. All these things I keep doing, only to get you to love my matter.
And you can bring all your GFs, so we party hard, oh. Or don't make me a BF.
I just want to.
I want to be loved by you.
I just want to.
I want to be loved by you.
I just want to.
I want to be loved by you.
I just want to.
La da da da, la da da da, la da da da, la da da da.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington.
Nitakufikisha nitakutoa kwenye giza, toa kwenye nitakutoa kwenye giza, toa kwenye nitakutoa kwenye giza. Wananiita upepo, maana kila saa nipo wapi napotakiwa kuepo, na kupeleka kisha na kurudisha, kukuonyesha your full potential. Life is not hard, it's the common sense of a human being that sets us apart. Coast to coast kama kamusi, nasho na hinjio tafikiria msusi. Wengi sini nyota, inasikitisha tujui kwamba tunadeserve maisha bora. Sina proper definition unless unikute in action. It's such a beautiful thing when you witness someone being active. Jadala unakuja kabla talaka, hii ni process haitaji haraka. Kila mmoja wetu wana umuhimu hapa. Sina muda wa kutest na muda wa kuaccomplish and show you what it means to be at your best. Uzoefu wa kukaa kwenye kona kujifanya mgumu, lakini je, yeah, unajua maana umaradumu. Zaidi ya rapper, haswa mini philosopher, niko hapa kuongeza wangu kutoka kwenye ulofa. Nitakufikisha, nitakufikisha, nitakutoa kwenye giza, toa kwenye nitakutoa kwenye giza, toa kwenye nitakutoa kwenye giza.
Jua linatoka na kuzama, natumai utafanya jambo la maana. Wananchi wamechoka kula hasara, upotevu una undugu kuliko kuzidi kubadilisha watu kuwa masugu. Sio rahisi, ila uzalendo wangu wakubali niwe na udhaifu. Siwezi kuachia taifa langu lipate aibu, vitendo ni tofauti, ndo maana nafukua mauti. Tuweze kusikia hizi sauti, maneno yangu yawapatia watu nguvu. Kutoka nyumbani, kutoka nyumbani kutafuta kito eo, kwa atakaoendeleza taifa la kesho. Watu wanavuruga, sema hawajui kupanga, ndo maana tupo nyuma kistandard. Watafikiria siye ni wenda azimu, ila mmoja wetu lazima ajitolee kuwa mwalimu. Amini ipo siku mwenzangu, kuwa mkarimu.
Twende, twende, twende.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, those who have not yet crossed the river should not laugh at those who are drowning. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Go ahead and listen. You said you want to die. Go ahead and let go now. Go now. You said you want to die.